morning. May it please the Court, my name is Michelle Lomdu and I represent the Department of Medical Assistance Services, which I will refer to as DMAS for the Department. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
2 minutes, thank you, yes.
We're here today because the Circuit Court failed to follow binding authority in a case involving substantially similar facts. By failing to follow that binding authority, the Circuit Court deviated from the doctrine of stare decisis and provided no justification for that deviation. In order to ensure fair and consistent application of the law and to preserve public trust in that administration application of law, the courts have adopted and follow the basic self-governing principle of stare decisis. As such, any departure from that doctrine demands special justification. In Virginia, this court and the Virginia Supreme Court have often stated that the doctrine of stare decisis is not a cliche. It is a doctrine that plays a significant role in the orderly administration of justice and the assurance of consistent, dependable, and predictable application of the principle. Application of legal principles.
And you're talking about the first stop decision.
Correct, Your Honor.
Do you take the position that first stop was a departure from prior law?
No, Your Honor. The department takes the position that by failing to follow first stop, the circuit court departed from precedential and binding authority. And so when a court of last resort has established a precedent after full deliberation of the issues by that court, that precedent will not be set aside lightly or ignored, and in the absence of flagrant error or mistake. The principle and doctrine of stare decisis not only includes the literal holding of the case, but also the essential rationale that led to that holding. As such, the result of the court not only binds following courts, but also the reasoning that led to that conclusion. In this case, on April 8th, 2014, this court published its decision in the matter of First Stop Health Services doing business as First Stop Home Care versus DMAS. That case involved substantially the same facts as the case at bar. This matter was brought before the circuit court that this first stop decision had been issued and was binding authority, and the circuit court failed to follow that opinion and stated no reason why it was not following that opinion. The substantially similar facts between this case and first stop are as follows. In both cases, the providers were audited by the department. The providers are providers of both personal care and respite care services. In First Stop, only the personal care services were audited. In this case, both services and their records were audited. But that makes no difference in terms of the rationale of the case. In First Stop, the court noted that the record-keeping provisions of the agreement between the provider and DMAS were essential, and that the hearing officer in that case, when it had reversed the error codes, held those record-keeping provisions as immaterial. Similarly here, the circuit court held the record-keeping provisions as immaterial, thereby deviating from this rationale that the First Stop court has set forth. Further, First Stop noted that the required documentation must be maintained prior to and at the time of the audit, not through reorganizing and explaining following a failed audit, which is what happened in the case of First Stop and in the case of Barr. The same manual provisions and regulations that applied in the First Stop case applied in this case. As such, there was no reason for the circuit court not to follow the precedential and binding authority of First Stop when it was brought to the circuit court's attention. By failing to do so, the circuit court erred.
But even if we, for the sake of argument, agree with you that First Stop stands for the proposition that any breach of a term that is provided in the that is included in the provider agreement, whether that term is included by adoption and incorporation of other terms or in the provider agreement itself, they're going to be treated as a material breach. So if we get past that, don't we still, in the case of Error Code 901, if I understand correctly, the Error Code 901 was applied where there was no supporting documentation for the hours that were charged. But the reason that there was no supporting documentation in some of those instances where Error Code 901 was applied was because in order to assist the auditor, someone at ABLEX had marked PC to help the auditor understand that these documents supported the hourly charge. Even applying the standards of First Stop, don't we still have to deal with whether application of 901 under those circumstances was arbitrary and capricious?
No, Your Honor. First Stop also dealt with Error Code 901. And under the facts of this case, what happened when the auditors went to the facility to audit ABLEX, the documents and the records were all commingled, as was the case in First Stop. And in order for the auditors to do their job, they asked ABLEX, how do you sort your documents? Which form is for which service, personal or respite care? In that case, as was testified by the provider's witnesses, the auditors were told if the form is marked PC or it's circled, it's for personal care services. If it's marked RC or respite, it's for respite care services. Similarly, if it's on a green sheet, so it may not have marking, but it's on a green sheet, it's for respite care services. Otherwise, it is generally for personal care services. The auditor took the provider at its word that that's what the forms were for. So solely for the purposes of calculating the number of hours on the form, in those instances where the form was on a white sheet of paper with no marking whatsoever, the auditors gave the provider the benefit of the doubt for calculating the number of hours. So for Error Code 901, that sheet would have been counted for personal care services. Okay, the problem was when the provider was then furnished with the preliminary audit findings, it decided that, oh no, those forms weren't really for what we told you they were for and what they were marked as when you did the on-site audit. They were for this other service that now we realize we don't have documentation for. And in those instances where there was already an error code, the department also applied Error Code 916. So solely for purposes of calculating Error Code 901, the department took the provider at its word on how the documentation worked. So for that purpose, it's the same as the First Stop.
So if the provider said, if they're unmarked, the way we organize these things, unmarked means personal care. That's the default position. That was okay with the auditor?
For purposes of Error Code 901.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Now, those documents were assigned a related but separate error code of 914 because there was no objective identification of which service was provided. But for purposes of Error Code 901, the provider was given the benefit of the doubt that that unmarked form was for personal care services.
Okay, thank you.
If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time.
Very well, thank you. Who will be arguing for ABLEX?
I will.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Jonathan Joseph on behalf of the appellee ABLEX. Now, this case ultimately involves DMAS's arbitrary and capricious decision to retract, even though the records had been provided to the auditors to support the hours that were billed. The case was heard in Richmond Circuit Court by Judge Roop, who allowed the parties, quote, as much time as they want, approximately an hour and a half, to go through this and argue their positions. The court issued its decision from the bench and requested that the parties prepare an order while they were in the courtroom, which the parties jointly did, and Judge Roop signed it. DMAS then, several weeks later, requested that the court reconsider its decision and was given another opportunity to argue its position before the court without ABLICS's counsel being present due to scheduling conflicts. And the court affirmed its previous decision that DMAS was arbitrary and capricious. So after two opportunities to present its case to the circuit court, we are now here before this court. Now, DMAS raised two procedural issues, which we fully responded to both in our brief. And the first was that the department wasn't on notice about error code 901, that it was arbitrary and capricious, and we made this clear in our briefs, and we referenced the fact that during the formal briefs this was noted. We also referenced the fact that it was noted in the final agency decision, and that in the petition for appeal it was noted that DMAS acted in disregard of the facts and the law, and this was consistent with this court's decision in Loudoun Hospital versus Struby as meeting the Supreme Court rules. Now, the second issue, which is the one that we've heard about today, is the issue raised by DMAS as far as the impact of First Stop. The circuit court correctly found that the First Stop decision should not impact its ruling in this case. First Stop was confined to the facts of the case, which were before the court, and they're not the same facts here.
Do you take the position that First Stop was a revelation of new law?
We do. We do take that position. The reason is that before the First Stop decision was issued, the court had taken the position that essentially there was a materiality or substantial compliance type of standard that was used. But with regard to the issue of the DMAS 90 forms being organized, after the First Stop decision, this court took the position that if those forms weren't organized when the auditors came on site, then it was de facto breach of the agreement. So we do take the position that it was new law.
Well, doesn't the manual, I thought it was the manual, required that at the time of the audit, there must be some separation or differentiation made between the respite care and the personal care documents?
I think that it's important to understand how these audits work. The audit in this case took 9 months. The auditors came on site, they asked for some information, then they went off site, then they sent back preliminary findings, they asked for more information. So the audit process itself isn't just a single day. In some situations, the auditors never come on site at all. All they do is send a letter to the provider and they say, provide us with this information. So the providers have the opportunity to organize their information in those situations and send it. In these cases where they just kind of show up, the providers sometimes don't have everything totally organized, but they organize it, and that's the whole purpose of this opportunity to respond to their preliminary findings. In this particular case, when the auditors came on site, there were some files were not separated, so the providers explained how they thought they should be separated. Now, when the auditors went back to their offices, they drew up their preliminary findings. They sent them to the provider, and the provider looked at those preliminary findings and noticed that their auditors had still found certain things, you know, were not available to them, or that they couldn't figure out certain things. So the provider noted, look, these records, which they had circled at the top, these forms say respite and personal care. Okay, there's no requirement that they say that, but they have them on the form. The reason being that the forms can be used for both. So in certain circumstances, the auditors said, well, this form was circled respite care, so we can't give you credit for personal care. This is even given the fact that there were only 8 hours of respite care, of personal care billed that day. There was no respite care billed that day. So it was obvious that the aide was there providing personal care. So what the staff did at ABLICS was to write PC on that form and send it back and say, you know, this was personal care.
Even though the nurse's aide or whoever provided the service had circled respite care instead of personal care?
These aides are very low level in terms of education. They don't necessarily know that they're not supposed to circle that at the top. There's
but
no requirement.
Again, counsel, though, isn't that in deviation from what's required by the contract with incorporating all the terms and conditions that are set forth in the manual?
No, it's not.
Explain that, please.
Well, the manual has no requirements to circle anything on those forms.
No, but the manual does indicate that you're required to keep, even though you may use the same sheet, that you're required to set forth differences between personal and respite. They're required to be divided, is that not? Did I misunderstand that?
The manual requires that you have the records, and it's very vague language, but essentially says you can have the same file, but they have to be separated within the file. Mm-hmm. So essentially, if you had a file in front of you, and you had personal care on one side and respite care on the other, and you had a piece of cardboard in between, if that cardboard was moved over and one sheet of paper fell on the wrong side, then if you took the position of the auditors, we as providers wouldn't have the ability to move that piece of paper over to the other side and have it fall into the correct category. So, yes, the manual does say that they need to be provided, but what the manual does not say is that you have to make any notice on the form, any sort of notification on the form as to whether it's personal care and respite care. And that's really part of the problem with the way that the auditors handled this audit. Because for error code 914, as counsel for DMS indicated, even though they recognized that these were personal care services, they took the position that they should retract for them because the form didn't notify personal or respite care on the form. Well, they took the provider's word that these were personal care services. In their audit notes, they recorded them as personal care services. But at the same time, they retracted every single dollar that was paid on those forms that didn't note either personal or respite care on the form. And we believe that was improper because there's no regulatory requirement to do that. And we believe Judge Ruth was correct when he found that was arbitrary and capricious.
But the EDCD manual does require that these records be separated from one another, respite and personal care, however that may be done. And that's what triggered code 914 on these, isn't it?
It requires that they be separated, but in terms of whether or not those records should be separated in the sense that they're in the same file and like a piece of paper is in between them, it's just, you know, the differentiation is not clear in terms of what's required. So we told the auditor, it would be no different than if the auditor came on site. We had some of our files in one room and some in another room, and we said the ones in that room were respite and the ones in this room were personal care. And then we went in the other room and we noticed, you know what, some of these files belong in the personal care room, so we moved them over there. I mean, that's essentially what we're dealing with. And the judge found that that during the audit, while they were on site, we provided that information, and they completely disregarded that information. This is totally different than the First Stop case. The First Stop case involved, if you look at the decision in First Stop, it was all about how the hearing officer at the hearing was using testimony at the hearing to essentially change the facts around and to decide that, you know, it wasn't treating First Stop fairly and it was arbitrary to allow First Stop to have a retraction compared with this situation, which was occurring while the audit was taking place. This court in Finnerty versus Thornton Hall has explained that the whole process of the audit and the informal fact-finding conference is the process where DMS is supposed to determine whether there's an overpayment. It's a continuum of processes. And this court made clear that until that informal fact-finding conference is over, there hasn't been a determination as far as an overpayment. But you can't use that analysis and then say that what's the purpose of this audit process, this 9-month process, if it's not for the provider to explain to the auditors this is record for respite care and this is a record for personal care. Otherwise, why not just have the auditors show up that day and then leave and never communicate again with the provider? There's a reason why that process occurs. It's exactly for these situations.
Well, so, counsel, from what you're stating is that ultimately you can have your files in any type of disarray And when the auditor comes in, if you can try to explain things and you can go get them out of different rooms or this or that, then that ultimately that auditor is required to take their word for it, even though the manual specifically says they need to be designated in the record, in their record.
At the time that the auditors arrive.
How could business be accomplished in the Commonwealth for auditors if everyone took the same position you're taking and said that when an audit is on premises, that you can then gather your information and try to reconstruct what should have been done at the time of, because the manual says at the time of.
There was no reconstruction in this case. It was simply a matter of the provider explaining to the auditors, essentially taking some of the papers that were in this pile and moving them over to this pile. They had gotten mixed up at the time that they were filed.
Okay, then I must have misunderstood, because I thought that when I read the manual, it said that they were to be kept separately.
At the time that the auditors arrived, that's the requirement. Otherwise, there's really no point in having the auditors come on site and do an audit. This case, again, is different than First Stop. And under the Chevron test also, we would argue that First Stop can't be applied retroactively because the court had consistently applied a material breach standard with regard to the provider's compliance with the manual requirements. First Stop changed that approach, asserting that with respect to DMS 90 forms that were not physically separated prior to the audit, it was a de facto breach, and disregarding the substantial compliance standard. It's also important to note that personal care and respite care have different names, but they're exactly the same service. It's not like the aides are doing anything different. They're doing the same thing. That's the whole reason that the forms say personal and respite care at the top, because they are checking off the same services when they're billing for, you know, essentially the same thing. They're paid the same rate for these services.
But counsel, let me just ask you this. If they're the same thing, why would you have to expect anybody to differentiate between the
two? The reason for the differentiation is that personal care services are essentially pre-authorized services where every week you know you're going to see this person 8 hours a day. You get that pre-authorized. Respite care services are services that are provided, for example, if the caregiver is late getting home and calls the aide and says, I'm going to be a couple hours late, can you stay? So essentially what DMS has done is they've created two buckets. They allowed 720 hours for respite care services so that there is this leeway of somebody, say, arriving late. But the payment is exactly the same. The aide is doing the same thing while they are there. And we've never exceeded those hours on any of the patients that were involved. So there was never any situation where DMAS was in any way financially harmed by any of this. Now, the court found that it was arbitrary and capricious that DMS retracted under Error Code 901, stating that a record did not exist for services, when DMS offered the records to support the services to the auditors during the audit. And I have to correct the facts here, because the provider wrote PC on those records after the auditors had been on site, and there were certain records that they realized that the auditors had thought were respite and maybe they were really personal care. So that's the whole point. This 9-month audit took place, that they had the ability, the auditors actually asked them, is there any additional information you have to provide? And they provided it. The auditors took the position that if you wrote PC on the form, that was error code 916, that you were altering the form. Well, if you look at the manual, that's about something completely different. That's about changing the format of the form, and we never did that. This case boils down to DMAS failing to accept ABLICS's information on whether a particular DMAS 90 form belonged in the respite care or the personal care file. The court also took note of the fact that the services were identical and the payments were identical. Therefore, DMAS not only acted in an arbitrary and capricious manner by ignoring information that was provided to it, but even if ABLICS was deemed to have failed to properly organize its files, DMAS suffered no harm. Finally, as ABLICS has substantially prevailed at the circuit court level due to DMS's arbitrary and capricious actions, it's entitled to its attorney's fees. Therefore, we would request that the circuit court's decision be upheld and that attorney's fees be awarded.
Counsel, did you make objection when attorney fees were denied in circuit court?
I'm out of time, but if I can answer the question. The Supreme Court has held that that when you argue a position before the circuit court, whether or not you notate that on the court's order is not relevant. And we did make clear to the court that we were seeking attorney's fees at the time that the issue was argued before the court. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Rebuttal, Ms. Lahamadu.
First of all, the First Stop case stands for the position that commingled forms, which was the case in First Stop and in this case, is when there's no objective way to identifiably separate the forms, is not the required accurate, organized, and contemporaneous record keeping that a provider is required to have under the regulations and the manual provisions that are required to be followed under the provider agreement. In this case, the provider's records were shuffled together and mingled together, and the provider itself was unable to tell the auditor what records were for what. And it was only when it was confronted with a discrepancy in the documentation it had that it attempted to go back and change those records. Counsel has submitted that the marking of the form as respite or personal care was done by the aide. He neglects to inform the court, as was testified to by both of the provider's witnesses, who are supervisory nurses, that they review all of the forms submitted by the aides and they ensure that everything on that form is correct. Those supervisory nurses also testified that they are aware of the difference between respite care services and personal care services, that they are two different services, that they need to have separate documentation, and that is required under the regulations and manual provision.
So their review process is something that's done more or less contemporaneous with the provision of services, not something that's done at the time of the audit.
Correct, Your Honor. The provider's witnesses testified that the aid forms were submitted weekly, and that's when these supervisory nurses reviewed those forms. So at the time that this service was provided by these aides, they filled out the forms, the recipients or their designated caretakers signed the forms along with the aides. They were submitted. The supervisory nurse hired by the provider or the provider's administrator reviewed those forms to ensure that the accurate information was on there and then filed the form away. All right. In several of the instances which are in the appendix, the provider, after the audit findings, went back and changed a form from respite care to personal care. Well, that contradicts the fact that that same recipient and same aide also has a personal care form. So the aide had submitted two forms for that recipient for that week, a personal care form and a recipient care form, or a respite care form. So the aides were submitting two different forms because they had provided the two different services for that recipient, and that was signed off on by the supervisory nurse. Now the provider finds out, oh, we don't have enough documentation of those personal care hours. We need to change what had been marked as respite care to personal care. And that's what was done. That documentation is throughout the record in the appendix 119 through 166, several of those examples. And that documentation, that shoddy record keeping, is what led the hearing officer to make her decision that the provider had not adhered to the requirements of the regulations and the manual, and for the DMAS director to uphold the hearing officer's recommended decision in keeping those error codes as applied. The provider has also argued that the manual and regulations do not require personal care or respite care to be circled on the form. And that's correct. However, they do need to be objectively identifiable so that if they are commingled and one thing is misfiled, there is a way for the provider to show, oh, wait, this was misfiled, and I can show you because it's on green paper, and all of our respite care forms are on green paper. It should have gone in that section, not in the personal care section. That is acceptable and would have been acceptable in this case and was acceptable for these instances. There are instances where a green sheet for respite care was changed to personal care. So if the aide submits a form for respite care on green paper, the supervisory nurse knows that green sheets are for respite care at the time the form is submitted, and that's filed away, and it's all fine. Then 2 years later, when they're audited, they want to change that to personal care hours. That's a problem. They're billing DMS for improperly documented services, and the fact that the
Go ahead and finish, wrap it up.
The fact that on the aide's end, the services are the same does not negate the fact that the services are provided for under different criteria. They serve a different function, and they must adhere to different requirements in terms of record keeping. For those reasons, we ask this court to reverse the circuit court and deny attorneys.
Thank you very much. We'll come down and greet counsel and thereafter take